Tonight, we are going to be looking at 1 Corinthians chapter 7. We've been looking and examining the book or the letter that Paul wrote to the Corinthian church. And so we're continuing those thoughts and examining what we can learn from what Paul, from the message Paul left for them. And we have, through this good book of Paul's, this instructive book, have looked at the dangers of disunity. We've looked at the dangers of prejudice, of pride. And last week, we looked at chapter 6 and examined about brotherly love and how that we cannot allow enmity to grow in the church. And at the end of chapter 6, he gets into a discussion about sexual immorality. Now, chapter 7 is going to take that topic of sexual immorality and make a direct application from the pen of Paul to the marriage relationship. The marriage relationship of Christian brothers and sisters, as well as marriage in general. And so tonight, we're looking at the principles of marriage. Now, I want to do it from two perspectives. As we go through here, you'll notice how Paul gives direct messages from God. And he lays down some doctrinal do's and don'ts, some things that are straight from the mouth of God. And then at other times, he will speak from his own opinion. And so as we go through this, I want to break it up that way. And I want to look first at what God says to us. And then I want to look at some of the highly educated opinions of Paul. You notice in verse number 10, just as an example, Paul writes, "Now to the married I command..." not I, but the Lord, right? And so that is a command from God. That's not a matter of opinion. But then other times, you go back up to verse 7, and he says this, "For I wish that all men were even as I myself." What's Paul talking about? That's his opinion, right? These are some amount of advice that he's trying to give. And so the chapter really breaks down like that. Verse 1 sets the premise of the entire chapter. I want to go back. Look at verse 1 with me. It's up here on the board as well. Paul writes, "Now concerning the things of which," notice this, "you wrote to me." So in this chapter, he is actually answering a question some kind of comment from them. It was something they wanted to know more about. And so he says, "I'm going to do that." Now, notice what it is. "It is good for a man not to touch a woman." Now, just remember what he said at the end of chapter 6. He says, "Flee immorality." That section, beginning at verse number 18, really sets the foundation for what we're talking about here. And so they had obviously written to him about sexual immorality, maybe asking about what God commands, maybe what his suggestions are. We're not sure. We don't have that letter that they wrote to him. We just have his response. So today I want to look at that, and I want to see, again, what is it that God lays down as rock principles, unmovable principles in regard to marriage and the sexual relationship of marriage. Number one, I want you to notice, is that marriage is to be the union of one man and of one woman. Notice, if you will, verse number 2. Verse number 2, Paul writes, "But because of the temptation to sexual immorality, each man should have his own wife and each woman her own husband." Right? And so he is just, again, reiterating what has been laid down a long time ago. You go back to the book of Genesis chapter 2 and God lays it down there. How that when he formed Eve from Adam and he bonded them together in marriage. Marriage is really between three parties, not just two. It's between the husband, the wife, and God. It is God that joins the two. I want you to notice what Jesus says about this in Matthew 19, verses 4 through 6. In answering a question about divorce, and we'll get into this more as we go. We're going to use Matthew 19 a little bit tonight as well. But Matthew 19, Jesus answered them in saying, "Have you not read that he who created them from the beginning," going back to the Genesis account, Genesis chapter 2, created them from the beginning, made them male and female, and said, "Therefore a man shall leave his father and his mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh." So they are no longer two, but one. One flesh. "What therefore God has joined together, let not man separate." I want to notice a few things here. Now I know, and we don't have time to get in depth look, but homosexuality has become a real challenge to godly marriage, and some have argued that, hey, if they love each other, what does it matter, right? But I want you to notice a couple of things. Number one, the institution of marriage was not founded by human beings. And that's very important. This is a God-given institution. And so God is the only one who can make an alteration to it. And he hasn't. And he won't. It's only God that can set the perimeters of it. And God did in Genesis chapter 2. Jesus reiterates it in Matthew 19. And Paul in 1 Corinthians 7 again reiterates the fact that it is between one man and one woman. Not two men, not two women. Not one man and two women. Not one woman and three men, right? It is between one man and one woman. And that is the perimeter that God bound it with. That's the boundaries of God. It is a God-formed institution. And so we do not have the right to alter it. Now, that's important. Remember, to be married does not require the government stamp of approval, right? The government giving you a form does not make you married. It can only come from God, and that is important when we talk about some other things as we go on. Marriage is something that God joins and not man, all right? So marriage is a union between one man and one woman. Number two, notice sexual intimacy is to be reserved for the marriage relationship and not outside. Go on, verse number 3. The husband should give to his wife her conjugal rights. Likewise, the wife to her husband. For the wife does not have, notice this, authority over her own body, but the husband does. Likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Do not deprive one another, except perhaps for by agreement for a limited time, that you may devote yourselves to prayer, but then come together again so that Satan may not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. The sexual activities between human beings, between a man and a woman, is reserved solely for marriage and not outside. Anything outside of marriage is fornication. And that would include adultery, obviously, in that bigger heading. Anything outside of that is improper. Notice again in verse number 9. Verse number 9, he continues, "But if they cannot exercise self-control, they should marry. For it is better to marry than to burn with passion." And one of Paul's points, and we'll get into this, one of the reasons marriage is given and so that there would be a proper place for the sexual relationship between human beings. Jesus also speaks about this in Matthew chapter 19. Matthew 19, verse 7. They said to him, "Why then did Moses command one to give a certificate of divorce?" And that's setting the perimeter of the whole discussion. And to send her away. "He said to them, 'Because of your hardness of heart, Moses allowed, by permission of God, to divorce your wives. But from the beginning, it was not so. And I say to you, whoever divorces his wife, except for sexual immorality, and marries another," notice this, "commits adultery." What have they done? They've left the marriage to seek sexual fulfillment. And Jesus quite clearly says, if you involve yourself in that kind of relationship with anyone other than your spouse, that is adultery. The Hebrews writer says in Hebrews 13 and verse 4, let marriage be held in honor among all, and let the marriage bed be undefiled. For God will judge the sexually immoral and adulterous. So we notice again, God sets the definition of where, or sets the perimeter or boundaries of where sexual activity can take place, and it is within marriage only. So that means anything that happens before the marriage is fornication. Anything that happens outside of the marriage is fornication or adultery. Notice this one. Divorce is not the answer. Divorce is not the answer we should seek. Notice again, 1 Corinthians 7, 10 and 11. "To the married, I give this charge." Now notice this. "Not I, but the Lord." This is not an opinion of Paul. We'll get into some of what his advisements are later. "The wife should not separate from her husband. But if she does, she should remain unmarried, or else be reconciled to her husband, and the husband should not divorce his wife." Again, I want to go back to what Jesus says in Matthew 19. Matthew 19, verse 6, remind you what he says there. He says, "So they are not," the married couple, "they are no longer two, but one flesh. What therefore God has joined together, let not man separate." Remember the principle. Only God can institute a marriage. Now let's go back to 1 Corinthians 7. Paul says that when you are married, you should not divorce. All right, that's not the answer. If a divorce occurs, you cannot then go and find another sexual partner. In other words, you can't go marry someone else. He says, either you remain as you are, unmarried, or you be reconciled to your partner. That's your only two options. And so some will say, but you know, I didn't love him, or I didn't this. Can I, or that happened before I became a Christian. Notice Genesis 3, there are no Christians in Genesis 3. Genesis 3, there are no Israelites. In Genesis 2, there are none of those things. The principle of marriage was instituted before any of those came into existence. Those principles of marriage apply to all people. Just because you have a marriage license from the government does not make you married in the eyes of God. If it is not instituted according to the will of God, it is not a marriage. You're just simply living in adultery. And so he challenges them, he challenges us. Are we living in a relationship that's been blessed, that has been instituted by God? If you are not, then you should get out of that relationship. He says, remain unmarried. Divorce is not the answer. You should seek that restitution if it possible. Now, are there exceptions to that? When divorce has to take place. What about that person who's been committed adultery against? Yes, Matthew 19 lays out the steps for that. But notice, you and I cannot break a marriage. We can't. Only God can do that. And God says the only way a marriage can be broken is when one spouse commits adultery against the other. That allows the other individual freedom to marry. And then they can go and they'll form a new bond with someone else if they choose to. And that gets us into the last one here from Godly Principles. Marriage is a lifelong commitment. Notice verse 39 of this chapter. There Paul says, from the mind of God, a wife is bound to her husband as long as he lives. But if her husband dies, she is free to be married to whom she wishes, only in the Lord. Now he's going to repeat something very similar to this, or he writes something very similar to the Romans in Romans chapter 7. There he says, for a married woman is bound to the law, or bound by law to her husband while he lives, but if her husband dies, she is released from the law of marriage. All right. So there's two exceptions to the rule of divorce, right? The marriage bond is broken when sin occurs, the sin of adultery. And that gives me freedom to remarry, to remarry, to find a new spouse, or at the death of my spouse. But what does that mean? Marriage is a lifelong commitment I'm making to my spouse. I'm going to devote myself. Again, Matthew 19 and verse 6, I know I've hit this a lot, but I want to again reiterate the principle. What God has what joined together, let not man separate. Sometimes people get upset because things don't go their way in marriage. And this has always been a problem. It's not new with our culture. We say that stuff all the time. But it's really been an old thing. But it seems like divorce is getting so much easier to do in a legalistic way that people are ready to divorce at the drop of a hat. What's Paul's point here? Don't do that. What's Jesus' point? Don't do that. You've made a commitment to the other person, but not only that, you have made a commitment before God. You need to honor that commitment. Marriage is intended to be a lifelong commitment. So those are, when you pull it out, and I may have missed one, those are, as I was reading and studying, those were the principles of marriage that Paul lays out in 1 Corinthians 7. Now, I want to also look at some of the important advice he gives to the married and even to the single and the widowed in this chapter. These are, as we mentioned before, these are times when Paul breaks out of speaking from the mind of God, and he speaks from his own mind and heart. And we'll notice that as we go. But in this first thing, I want you to notice, in the view of the current persecution of the church in the first century, Paul believed it was better not to marry. Notice verse number 1, that was what they were writing to him about. They were, at least it had something to do with this. You notice there again, now concerning the matters about which you wrote, it is good for a man not to have sexual relations with a woman. He's going to go on, and of course he delivers what God says about it. And then notice verse 6. Verse 6 of chapter 7. Now as a concession, not a command. Notice that. These are from the mind of Paul. This is his advice. I give this as a concession. not a command. I say this. I wish that all were as I myself am, but each has his own gift from God, one of one kind and one of another. To the unmarried and to the widows, I say that it is good for them to remain single as I am. So notice what he's saying. He's saying that it would be better for those who are single, those who are unattached, to just remain in that state. But again, it's opinion. He goes on to explain a little bit more in verse 36 through 38. If anyone thinks that he is not behaving properly toward his betrothed, if his passions are strong, and it has to be, let him do as he wishes. Let them marry. It is no sin. Again, he's in a discussion of opinion. But whoever is firmly established in his heart, being, notice this, under no necessity, but having his desire under control, and has determined in his heart to keep her as his betrothed, he will do well. So then he who marries his betrothed does well, and he who refrains from marriage will do even better. Now we're going to get into a discussion more about why he's saying that as we go on, and he explains it even more. But notice what he says there. He doesn't have anything against marriage, but he also understands the complexities of the life of that day. They're under heavy persecution, and taking on a family adds a greater burden. Now in his opinion, and he lived as a single man his whole life, he never married, never had children. His view was that was the best life to live as a Christian. Now, we all have a perspective in life, right? We all believe our perspective is the best perspective of how you should live. But it's your perspective, right? And Paul understands that. And he's not laying any command on them. But in his opinion, it was better in the current situation if they remain unmarried than to marry. But it is interesting, he doesn't end there. Let's go, but before we go to the next thing, I want to notice what, again, Jesus says in Matthew 19. He gives a similar instruction or a similar advice. Again, this is not command, and you'll notice why as we read it. But Matthew 19, beginning at verse 10. The disciples said to him, "If such is the case of a man with his wife, it is better not to marry." And so they've heard what he said about marriage and about adultery. And then they begin to ask, you know, is it just better we don't marry? Now, they may have expected him to turn around and say, yeah, well, no, that's not the case. You still get married. It's interesting Jesus doesn't say that. And Peter, several, maybe all the men were married, by the way, interestingly enough, except for Jesus himself. He goes on in verse 11, but he said to them, "Not everyone can receive the saying, but only those to whom it is given. For there are eunuchs who have been so from birth," those who are genetically or medically eunuchs, and there are eunuchs who have made themselves eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. Let the one who is able to receive this receive it. So even Jesus said, for some, it is just better to remain single. If you can hold yourself, if you can show self-control over your passions, in Paul's opinion, and Jesus even speaks to this, he says it's better maybe you don't do it, right, if you can do that. But not everybody can, and so this isn't a matter of opinion and of advice and not a strict command. Notice the second thing he says, interestingly enough, why do I say Paul isn't against marriage? Notice what he says. Number two, seek to stay together, even if your spouse is an unbeliever. Notice verses 12 and following. To the rest I say, I not the Lord. Again, this is a matter of opinion. He's stating that right out. that if any brother has a wife who is an unbeliever and she consents to live with him, he should not divorce her. Remember we said before, one of the principles of marriage, if you're in a marriage relationship, you should not seek divorce. You should not seek separation from your spouse because you just want to get away. Verse 13, if any woman has a husband who is an unbeliever and he consents to live with her, she should not divorce him. For the unbelieving husband is made holy by his because of his wife, and the unbelieving wife is made holy because of her husband. Otherwise, your children would be unclean, but as it is, they are holy. But if the unbelieving partner separates, let it be so. In such cases, the brother or sister is not enslaved. God has called you to peace. For now, notice verse 16. For how do you know, wife, whether you will save your husband? Or how do you know, husband, whether you will be able to save your wife? Now these echo the words of Peter, right? Sorry, I didn't put the scripture up there. But in 1 Peter chapter 3, likewise, wives, be subject to your own husbands, so that even if some do not obey the word, they may be won without a word by the conduct of their wives, when they see your respectful and pure conduct. A very, very similar idea there at the end in verse 16, both of Paul and Peter. But notice again there, were there going to be Christians who were going to be become Christians who have spouses who are unbelieving? Yes. Are there Christians in that situation today who have an unbelieving spouse? And Paul's point to them is you should seek to remain married. Don't try to use your Christianity as an excuse to get out of it. Now that's on the heels of his other advice about remaining single. Now notice the point there. Paul is not going against God's prescription for marriage. For those who are already... When he says to remain single, he's talking about those who've never married, right? Or those who are widowed. But for those who are in a marriage relationship, they should still seek to live with their spouse, to continue that marriage. Now that's... when he talks about... in verse number 15, but if the unbelieving partner separates, let it be so. I mean, you can't make somebody stay with you. And there were probably situations then, as there may be situations today, where because you're a Christian, your spouse just can't stand it. And they just leave, right? And so you're not commanded as the prophet was to go after his wife. I remember the wife's name's Gomer. The husband's name is leaving me now, but Gomer kept running away, and Hosea, is that Hosea? And he keeps going after her because God tells her to. We're not under obligation to be like a slave, but his principle is the same. You should seek to stay with that spouse. And notice why. Why? Because maybe you might be able to reach them and convert them. Even just through your conduct, through how you live, through them seeing your example, you can be an instrument for God in that person's life. But at the heart of it, you should seek to stay because marriage is to be a lifelong commitment, as we've mentioned before. Number three, he says to live as you are called. Again, this kind of falls along the lines of what he said previously. But notice verse number 17. He says, only let each person lead the life that the Lord has assigned to him and to which God has called him. This is my rule in all the churches. And then later in verse 25 and following, now concerning the betrothed, I have no command from the Lord, but I give my judgment as one who by the Lord's mercy is trustworthy. I think then of you, now notice this, and I should have had this on that first slide. And I think that in view of the present distress, it is good for a person to remain as he is. Are you bound to a wife? Do not seek to be free. Are you free from a wife? Do not seek a wife. But if you do marry, you have not sinned. And if a betrothed marries, she has not sinned. Yet those who marry will have worldly troubles. And I would spare you that. This is what I mean, brothers. The appointed time has grown very short. From now on, let those who have wives live as though they had none. And so he says, as God's called you, don't seek to gather. Now, I want you to notice a phrase there that he uses in verse number 29. He says, the appointed time has grown very short. Now notice what's in Paul's mind. What's he talking about? The time has grown very short. There could be a lot of answers to that, and I'm not going to definitively say one way or the other. Maybe he has the end of time in mind. And maybe as he views it, Jesus could return any day now. And he could, right? Maybe he has the persecution, the heavy persecution that will come against them in mind. I don't know exactly, but that is weighing heavy on his judgment here. But he says, live as you are called. Live as God called you. But again, he reiterates that being married, seeking marriage, is not sinful. And then finally, don't have divided interests. This really is at the heart of his concern. Notice verses 32 and following. I want you to be free from anxieties. The unmarried man is anxious about the things of the Lord, how to please the Lord. But the married man is anxious about worldly things, how to please his wife, and his interests are divided. And the unmarried or betrothed is anxious about the things of the Lord, how to be holy in body and spirit. But the married is anxious about worldly things, how to please her husband. I say this to for your benefit, not to lay any restraint upon you, but to promote good order and to secure your, notice this, undivided devotion to the Lord. What's Paul concerned about? He's concerned about marriage dividing people's interest or dividing people's focus. But as a Christian, even as a married Christian, I need to make sure that I'm not dividing my loyalties from God. All right? We should never have divided loyalties. Notice verse number 40. He's talking about widows and them marrying again. He says, yet in my judgment, the widower, is happier if she remains as she is. And I think that I too have the Spirit of God. So again, he's concerned about the way Satan would tempt those who enter a marriage relationship, that he might tempt them to not do what they need to do, especially those who are in a relationship with an unbeliever, right? Those could be very difficult situations. People have lived in that situation. How often does your spouse get excited about you going to worship, about you attending the activities of the church? And so I think that's at the heart of what Paul is saying. Again, it's opinion. That's how he saw things, and that's what he was truly concerned about. Matthew chapter 10, Jesus says something similar, and I won't read this whole section, but go back and read Matthew 10, 34 and following. But Jesus opens that up by saying, do not think that I have come to bring peace to the earth. I have come to bring, I have not come to bring peace, but a sword, for I have come to set a man against his father. And then he goes to that list of all these relationships he's come to bring division to. Now, again, it's not that Christ is seeking trouble in your family. But what he knows will happen with those who have families that are unbelievers, they're going to have trouble because Satan will use those unbelievers to try to destroy your faith. And Jesus is just warning his disciples, this will happen. And I believe that's the same kind of mindset that Paul has. Jesus ends this section by saying, whoever finds his life, verse 39, will lose it. And whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. Again, we cannot have divided loyalties in our lives. God has to be number one, even for those who are married. But again, I'll reiterate, he's not condemning marriage. He's not condemning the marriage relationship. It is a God-joined relationship. I love what the Proverbs writer says in Proverbs 18, verse 22. He who finds a wife finds a good thing, and notice, and obtains favor from the Lord. Marriage is a blessed institution, but like everything in our lives, it takes work. It takes work to maintain, to grow, both on both parties' parts. And as a Christian, our marriages can be one of the greatest lights in our lives to the lost world if we will utilize it. It all begins, though, by first devoting ourselves to God. All areas of our lives should showcase our devotion to God. How we treat our spouse, how we treat our children, our parents. The kind of example we are to our family. How we lead our family spiritually. All of those things can be a light for God if we will utilize them. Here in 1 Corinthians 7, Paul lays down godly principles concerning marriages, and he also provides to us some of his own advice. But the most important question any of us can ask is, how devoted are we to God? Do we have a relationship with God? Tonight, I don't know the status of your relationship with God, but if you need help in any way, we're here to help, to be of assistance. If you're not a child of God and you'd like to be immersed into Christ, we'd love to help you with that. If you're a child of God who isn't doing what you should, maybe you've gone back into sin, we'd love to help you with that. If you need to ask for forgiveness or if you just need prayers, we stand ready and willing to help. Please come together. We stand and sing.